Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to AJWS's webinar on our Haiti response to Hurricane Matthew. My name is Sam Walthus. I have the privilege of working at AJWS. I am the Director of Disaster Response and International Operations here at AJWS. First and foremost, I want to take a minute to thank all of you for your amazing generosity to our disaster response work, and particularly to our response to this terrible hurricane that happened just over 3.5 weeks ago in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Before we begin, I want to introduce my colleagues, Amber Lynn Munger, as well as Nixon Bumba. Both Amber and Nixon oversee our work in Haiti. Amber is based in the Dominican Republic, but soon after the storm hit, she traveled to Haiti to assess the needs of our partners in partnership with Bumba, who is based full-time in Haiti. Shortly, I'm going to turn it over to Amber, who can give you some background on our work in Haiti. We've been there for over 17 years, so we have a deep context of the country, and she will be able to tell you a little bit about that, including how we're responding to this current crisis. And then Bumba and Amber will both give you an on-the-ground report of what they witnessed while they were traveling and the experiences of our partner organizations. Lastly, I'm going to leave some time at the end for Q&A, and if you are interested in submitting a question, please do it via the webinar, or you can always email us at questions@ajws.org. So before I turn it over to Amber, I think it's very important to tell you a little bit about AJWS's approach to our disaster work, so that you get a better sense of our immediate and long-term response to this hurricane. As many of you know, because you have supported us for a very long time, AJWS has been responding to disasters for over 30 years, including the Indian Ocean tsunami, the devastating earthquake in Haiti just 6 years ago, the more recent earthquakes in Nepal, Ebola in Liberia, and of course, most recently, Hurricane Matthew in Haiti. AJWS very much prides itself in prioritizing community-led disaster response, as we know and believe that those who have been most affected by disasters are best positioned to articulate their needs, to identify their needs. As such, we have consistently supported organizations that are run by and for local people. We've been doing this, as I said, in Haiti for almost 2 decades, and we currently have 25 trusted community partners on the ground who we are prioritizing in our response work. In keeping with our human rights approach, we also prioritize those who are most marginalized. In the case of Haiti, we're referring to LGBT communities, communities who are living on the border of Haiti and the Dominican Republic, which Amber will talk a little bit about in a minute, and of course, those who are living in impoverished rural areas. We know through our extensive experience that those who are most marginalized are not only disproportionately affected by disasters, but unfortunately, they are often ignored by mainstream humanitarian organizations and even by their own governments. And this, sadly, has also been the case once again in Haiti. Lastly, AJWS sets itself apart from many organizations as we stay in the country in our response for a long period of time. Long after the humanitarian organizations have left and have moved on to the next disaster, we continue supporting groups to rebuild, to address the structural inequalities that have exacerbated the effects of a disaster, and of course, to help build the resilience of communities so that they can withstand the next disaster. And as Amber will soon talk a little bit about, AJWS continues to work in those communities that were affected by the earthquake in Haiti over 6 years ago. Haiti is an excellent example of how our disaster strategy works. And so now I'm going to turn the call over to Amber, who will tell us more about Hurricane Matthew, what she witnessed while she was on the ground, and how we are responding to this devastating hurricane. Thanks so much, Amber.
Thanks, Sam. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead, Amber.
Oh, okay, great. So I just have to start by saying that, both Bumba and I were in Haiti for the earthquake. And when Hurricane Matthew hit Haiti, we had not yet visited the South. We had heard initial reports coming out, but in our minds, we said, well, we've seen devastation before. It certainly can't be as bad as the earthquake, right? And then we started to drive to the South, and as we started our drive, we came across a few communities that had experienced some devastation, but it wasn't on the scale that we had seen from the earthquake, and so we, kept, just telling ourselves, okay, it's not that bad. But then we got to the South, and just after Okai, or Lakai, as it's called in the international community, we continued to head west. What we thought, we were just shocked. Can someone mute? Can everyone make sure that their phone is muted? Because I'm getting a lot of feedback. After we left Okai and started heading west, we saw communities that were just completely flat. The homes of our friends and people we visit every time we're in the South were completely destroyed. We just did not imagine that it could be on that scale. There was not a leaf left on a tree. And this is what the entire South of Haiti looks like. And we realized that it was as bad as what we had experienced in 2010. So what do we know about the statistics, the facts of this storm? We know that Hurricane Matthew was a Category 4 storm. And it's the strongest hurricane in the Caribbean since 1964. It made landfall on October 3rd. And we know that there are different reports about how many people who have died. In the news, we hear that it's more than 900, but the government has numbers that are a little bit lower because they haven't yet been able to reach all of the communities to verify the reports from local authorities of the number of dead. So we imagine that it's over 900 and that number will continue to grow as reports are able to be verified. We know that throughout Haiti, agriculture has been drastically affected, not just in the South, but all over Haiti, including widespread destruction of crops, trees, and livestock, which we also know will affect long-term economic and food insecurity. We also know that there's been major infrastructure damage, including roads and bridges, that still impair access to certain regions. The southern peninsula of Haiti, which consists of three departments, the Department of the South, the Department of Grand-Anse, and the Department of NEEP, were the most greatly affected. 90% of homes in the South and Grand-Anse have been destroyed, and Grand-Anse was the hardest hit. In fact, even a week after Hurricane Matthew, almost 2 weeks, there were still communities that were cut off from the rest of the world. And we know that 100% of food crops in the Grand-Anse have been destroyed. We also know that communities along the Haiti-Dominican Republic border have also been affected with massive flooding, destroying all of their crops and homes as well, which increases the likelihood of undocumented migration to the Dominican Republic. And overall, there's been tens of thousands of homes that have been destroyed, and at least 175,000 people remain displaced. And finally, we also know that cholera, which was brought by the UN military in 2010 and has caused the deaths of over 10,000 people and sickened hundreds of thousands, is now again on the rise due to contaminated floodwaters. So this situation is, it's quite bad, but there is some good, there is some light in this dark picture. For us, the light is local organizations who just immediately stepped up to respond after this disaster. Before the Haitian government or foreign NGOs could get there, our AJWS partners are in these communities that have been impacted, and they really are in the best position to respond in the fastest and most effective ways possible and in ways that respect the dignity of people who have been affected. So I'm going to let my colleague Bumba talk a little bit about some of those partners. So, Bumba?
Yes. Thank you, Amber, and thank you, everyone, for taking time to hear from us. I have lived in Haiti all my life. I experienced the earthquake of 2010 and the destruction that followed. My family is from the department of NIB, which was severely affected by the Hurricane Matthew. Amber and I, we spent the last 2 weeks visiting communities that were destroyed. We saw entire villages flattened and swept out to sea. We went to one village HWS is helping in the Candace called Leziwa. The entire area was destroyed. People lost their homes, animals, and farms. Many died, but the government has not come to help. So far, HWS and our grantees, RNDDH, were the only group to help these communities. When I arrived into the communities, I saw the local representatives of our partners were already helping the community assess the damage and getting help directly to those most in need. Hatician, I want to tell you that it's so important to support Haitian organizations to conduct disaster response, and this is why I am so glad to be working with HWS to provide this support. And now, my colleague Amber will talk about a little bit one of the partners, Gar, who works behind the border.
Yes, yeah, so I want to talk to you about our partner, Gar, which is just an extraordinary organization that's been doing great work in a region that's not getting nearly as much attention in this disaster, which is the border. You know, Haiti shares the island with the Dominican Republic, where many undocumented Haitian migrants go to seek a better life. But these migrants, once they get to the Dominican Republic, they have been severely persecuted in recent years. And over the last year, more than 100,000 people have fled the Dominican Republic, returning to Haiti. And most of these people have settled in the border communities where most of them are from. And in these border communities, they're very isolated, they're very poor, and these people, once returned, are really struggling to make ends meet. Well, the hurricane brought massive flooding to these very vulnerable communities. It washed away homes as well as crops and livestock. And, you know, crops are what people use to subsist. So now these communities are at very high risk for migrating back to the Dominican Republic, where they would again face persecution and human rights abuses. So our partner, GAR, has been working in border communities with migrant populations for more than 30 years. Even before the hurricane, it was GAR was helping migrants rebuild their lives, begin to feel secure, and create community once they had returned. And now with AJWS's support, GAR is quickly working to repair homes and reestablish food sources so that people can stay where they are instead of migrating back to the DR. They're also raising awareness about preventing waterborne diseases like cholera. And like most AJWS partners, they work directly in connection with local authorities to reinforce the work of the local authorities. While it's helpful to understand the work of AJWS partners, I also think it's really important to understand that local organizations and their leadership are also affected by the disaster. So, for example, at GAR, Anjanor, who's the program coordinator, when I was asking him about the border communities and what their plan was, et cetera, I remembered myself and asked him, well, Anjanor, where are you from? And he's from NEEP, and he said, my community was so badly affected. Out of the 50 homes in our town, only one home is left standing. And the advocacy coordinator for GAR, Geralda, when I last spoke with her, her sister was still missing. So, you know, it's important just to note that, you know, these people in the local organizations, they're affected directly too. And being affected by the disaster really motivates them even more to help their community members who are affected. But GAR is a really good example too, because their long-term work is so connected to the urgent needs of this disaster. In Haiti, most people in rural areas struggle to get identity documents. And without identity documents, they can't access, you know, everyday things like registering their children for school or taking a driver's test, for example. So it really increases their marginalization. Not only are they rural, but now they don't have access to identity documents. Well, now even the people who did, who were able to get identity documents in the South, because of Hurricane Matthew, they've lost everything, including those identity documents. So this is a really big deal at this particular time in Haiti, because Haiti's in the middle of 2 years of contentious elections and a very important election period. Elections were supposed to happen in October, but because of Hurricane Matthew, they've been postponed and they're now scheduled for November. But without identity documents, none of the people who are now some of the most marginalized and vulnerable people in Haiti affected by Hurricane Matthew are actually going to be able to vote. So a large component of our long-term work in Haiti is to make sure that all Haitians are able to have a say in their government and to advocate for leadership to be more accountable to the people. And as part of that work, AJWS supports our grantees to advocate for disenfranchised voters in the zones impacted by the hurricane. And moving forward, we will also be working with our partners to advocate for a modernized civil registry so that documents won't prevent people from exercising their right to vote and to participate in the political process. Okay, so that's a lot of me talking. So I'm going to just hand it over to Sam. I think we're probably ready for questions now.
Great. Thank you so much, Amber, and also thank you to Boomba. I hope this gave all of you a glimpse of not only the devastating impact of the hurricane, but also the amazing work of our partners. I just want to remind everyone how they can ask a question. You can do it through the Q&A function on the webinar, or you can email questions@ajws.org. And I'm going to now open it up for questions and give you a minute to type those in. Please keep your phones on mute. Thank you. Great. So we received a question from New York, actually. The question is, how did AJWS choose which organizations to support in Haiti? And I'm going to ask Boomba if he's willing to answer that question. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for this question. And as you know, AJWS, we are pursuing a long-term goals in Haiti to accompany the social movement to achieve the social change in Haiti. And disaster response, we try to be the best of ourselves to be aligned with our approach, with our values, as making values in Haiti. And we support our partners who work directly in the communities. We don't distribute anything in the communities. We support our partners. We ask our partners what they think, what they think we're supposed to do to accompany them to respond and with hurricane disasters. And we went to the community to see, to do some assessment, but we don't distribute anything, and we are not a conventional disaster. We distribute everything and everywhere. We work with closely with our partners, with our countries, who respond directly. We try as we can, and to ask to our partners and to be truthful and with them to respond, to respect our approach, because we work with them several times ago, several years ago, on Haiti, on human rights and social justice agenda, to change the situation in Haiti. This is our main criteria. Our criteria is to work with our partners, with whom we are trust relationship, and a long term goal. And in this way, we try to respond and we try to be to do the best of ourselves to respect our efforts, to respect our long-term goals, and to help people to respond themselves. And other thing we try to do is to give the leadership to local organization, to our partners, to lead the disaster response.
Great. So thank you so much, Bumba. I'm actually going to combine two questions, one that we received through the webinar and one that we received through the email inbox. The question is, can you describe the type of aid you're providing, such as medical kits, clean drinking water, etc., and is any of that work aimed at helping Haiti better able to cope with disasters yet to come? Amber, can you take that question?
Sure. So again, AJWS doesn't distribute anything in terms of kits. We fund local organizations. So the local organizations decide what they feel is the most appropriate response, what their capacity is, what they have access to. And so there's a variety of things that they choose. So, for example, our partner Goddess in the South, who works with women who are survivors of domestic violence, they immediately noticed that many of their members were in shelters, and so because their homes were destroyed. And so the thing that they prioritized was building materials for getting people out of the shelters where they are vulnerable, where their entire families are vulnerable, as is the situation in shelters, you know, throughout the world. So each partner is a little different. Our partner, RNDDH, has prioritized giving cash transfers because cash transfers enable people to decide what their priority is. Unlike, you know, sometimes an organization, international organizations are often known for food distributions, right, because we think people are hungry, so what they need is food. Well, if you don't have a house, the way that food is usually distributed is it's a whole sack of rice, right? Where, if you don't have a house, where are you going to store that sack of rice? Maybe what you actually need right now is, you know, enough rice for 3 days, and you want to sell the rest because you need roofing tiles so that you're not sleeping, so that your children aren't sleeping in the rain. So our partner, RNDDH, has prioritized cash transfers in really, really isolated areas so that people can decide for themselves how to prioritize their needs. In terms of long term, I would say that all of our work, right, all of our work is about forwarding the social movement in Haiti, the social movement for economic, social justice, and democracy, right? Because one of the reasons Haiti is so weak and Haiti is so poor is that it has been able to build a government responsiveness to the poor majority. Inequality in Haiti is extraordinary. It's one of the most unequal countries in the world. And until the power dynamic changes, where the marginalized majority have a say in the resources that are available in the country, the situation is going to perpetuate itself. So what our work, our long-term work, is funding organizations to organize so that people understand their rights and are able to exercise them, to advocate for changes, to advocate with government to make human rights reports, accountability reports about how the government is working and how systems are or aren't being accountable to the people. And so in that sense, these are the same organizations that we're funding in the disaster, right? So all of the organizations that we support are working to forward human rights goals, and they're part of a broader social movement. And so in funding these organizations, we're A, helping to make sure that the leaders of these communities can get back on their feet so that they're there to hold a recovery accountable, and B, to make sure that that aid is getting to the kinds of organizations that we know are going to exercise, you know, and abide by human rights principles in the way that they are responding.
Thank you, Amber. We have an excellent question that just came in from New York. The question is, what has the American governmental response been? Is there a particular action we want to ask or demonstrate for? And is the U.S. government responsive to the political implications of the disaster and or aware of marginal communities who need to vote?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Sam? Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a three-part question, but it's all related. But basically, what's the American U.S. government response? What has it been? Is there a particular action we want to ask for? And has the government been responsive to the political implications of the disaster, and or is the U.S. government aware of marginal communities who need to vote in the upcoming elections?
Okay, did you want me to take that one?
Sure, take that, Amber. Thank you.
Okay, so the United States government's response in a disaster is usually to send the military, is their first priority, which has, you know, mixed reception at best, I would say. Local communities, you know, having to send armed people to help, it hurts. You know, it hurts. People who are affected by a disaster need empathy, and they don't, you know, they have a real adverse reaction to being met by. They have a real adverse reaction to being met by military to give them help. So while there are, you know, there are some good reasons that the United States government thinks that, you know, military is a first step, sometimes particularly with logistics, right? So where bridges are out and, you know, and big vehicles need to get through places that can be that, you know, military is well designed to do some of those things. In general, that's really not the kind of reception that that Haitians want. And that's one of the things that the United States government has prioritized. The United States government also, you know, has not yet changed its tune with respect to elections. So this is a really important sorry, I'm continuing to get a call on my phone that is interrupting me. Apologies. The United States government has refused to support the next round of elections in Haiti. There was the first attempt at presidential elections was so fraudulent that none of the candidates, other than the one of the front runners, no one would stand by the results of the election, and the Haitian people largely rejected it. So there was agreement that the vote needed to be thrown out and a new election needed to be held. The United States government, who is usually supports financially a good portion of Haiti's elections, said, you know, if you're going to rerun your elections, you're going to do it on your own dime, and any money that you have left over from previous elections that you are going to allocate, you need to give us back. So this is something that is really painful, right, because if the election was so fraudulent, what we know is that there needs to be tighter systems in place, there needs to be better observation, there needs to be more transparency, and those things cost money. So a really good step for the United States government right now would be to support elections and at least to commit to supporting the outcome of Haiti's elections when the next round happens. I'm not sure that I addressed every single question there, but elections is also a complicated question that I don't know what the level of understanding of Haitian elections is of everyone on the call, and I don't want to spend too much time on it if that wasn't, unless you think that I should continue.
I think that was great, Amber. I will ask the individual who wrote in if he has a follow-up, he can go ahead and write it, and I will address it. There's a question here around what is the best way to help people and what do communities need the most? And I'm going to turn that one over to Bumba. So the best way to help people in Haiti and what communities need the most?
Qui meilleur gens pour aider communauté et puis qui sa communauté besoin?
Yeah. Okay. What I hear when I visit the communities, people has a lot of needs. Their house was destroyed. Their farms was destroyed. The first thing they need is to be able to rebuild their house, to find somewhere they can be comfortable without rains and soil. This is the first thing they ask. And this is we visit communities where very isolated, where there is no road for car to come, and people need to have some help to continue to do agriculture as as well. They did before the hurricane. And people have a process to some ideas of a process to receive help. And I hear people need house, gardens, and their animals was killed by the hurricane. And I think the problem will start 9 months later because they don't have gardens, they don't have animals, and they will try to raise after this hurricane. And for me, we're supposed to have a complete process to think about the urgent moment we're supposed to help people because they need food, they need house, they need some urgent kids. But in the community and NIP I visit, people said we don't need that we bring to us rice and other things like food. We need to have our house and to continue to do our work like farmers, like agriculture, because the government and the NGOs, and we know they are not coming to us. And other things, other issue we have to think when we talk about the help is the areas was most affected by the hurricane are very difficult to be to have access to, and if we want to distribute food like rice, other things, people have to do a lot of time to go. And to take and to bring with them. This is very hard to them. And I think the way that RNDD has tried to respond is, I think this is the ideal way, because we will give money to people where people can decide what they want to do with their money.
Great. Okay. So another question that came in, a very important question, states, I've heard in the news that aid sent to Haiti doesn't get spent. What happened in 2010, and how do we know it won't be the same this time around? Amber, I'm going to turn that one over to you.
So the question was about where did the money go? Was that the question?
Yeah, aid sent to Haiti doesn't get spent is what this individual has heard in the news. What happened in 2010, and how do we know it won't be the same this time around?
Right. So this is a really important question, right, because anybody who's read anything about the Haiti earthquake response is kind of familiar with the term, where did the money go, because we all know, we've all heard that billions of dollars went to Haiti's earthquake response, and the earthquake response is largely deemed to be a failure. But there's a lot of, you know, critical information that gets lost in sort of those taglines. One is that, it's a misconception that sending money to Haiti to help is just going to disappear, right? The difference is really, where does it go? Right? Who are you sending it to, and what are you spending it on? The disaster response for the earthquake, you know, those billions of dollars that we hear people talk about, were mostly from the USG, the European Union, large, you know, donor governments. And when they gave the money, they didn't actually give it to the Haitian government or Haitian organizations. The vast majority of that money, and this has been very well documented and researched, the vast majority of that money went right back to their own foreign contractors and companies in their countries to go execute projects in Haiti that most Haitians never bought into and weren't necessarily in alignment with what they wanted for their recovery. So those projects inevitably failed because they were designed by people who didn't understand Haiti and they weren't really accepted by Haitians. The other misconception is that, okay, money given to the Haitian government would, you know, the Haitian government is so corrupt, they certainly couldn't take money. Well, they only got, you know, less than 10% of the funds. And really, you know, who is in the best position to respond to, you know, to an enormous crisis? You know, when we're looking at infrastructure damage, you know, a local organization isn't going to rebuild road infrastructure. This is the role of the state. Unfortunately, Haiti's state is so weak right now that it's not able to do the job that an effective government should be able to do in a crisis situation. And so the question then becomes, if the Haitian government can't handle the problem, then, you know, automatically most people think, well, then let's give to an international organization, because we don't even know how to give to local organizations, right? Like, how does an American, in Boston know, what credible local organizations are there to give to? You know, everything Creole, and it's not like local organizations have websites or a GoFundMe page. So most of the time when you hear people, if you read online right now, any of the advice that people are giving how to support Haiti now, you'll hear give to local organizations, but they don't ever tell you how. And actually, that's what AJWS does, right? We exclusively give to local organizations. And I want to actually take this opportunity just to say that I want to assure folks that the funds that were disseminated by AJWS for the Haiti earthquake were 100% used and 100% went to local organizations and organizations that could support them. So it really illustrates the importance of giving locally. Every single dollar that AJWS spends on Haiti goes right to local organizations that can address the problems on the ground directly. And, you know, if that's the way that the earthquake response had happened, if that was the large scale approach, I think that we would see a different Haiti today than what we've seen post earthquake.
Great. Thanks so much, Amber. So I am actually going to address the very last question that I have here. The question is, do you have a financial goal for the amount of funds you need to raise for your short-term and long-term recovery efforts in Haiti, and how much have you sent in aid so far? As all of you have heard, the needs are huge. They're immense. They're vast. And Haiti will not be fixed tomorrow, or sadly, probably not in the next few years. Fortunately, AJWS has every intention of staying in Haiti for the foreseeable future. So all that to say is that we do not have a limit on how much we can spend in the country. We could easily spend $1 million, and we are far from that goal at this point. Currently, we have disseminated over $200,000 in grants. Our first grant went out 48 hours after the disaster hit, and we continue to make grants daily to support the efforts of our partners on the ground. So I want to reiterate my thanks to all of you for your tremendous generosity to American Jewish World Service, particularly to our hurricane response in both Haiti and the Dominican Republic. And we very much appreciate the time you've taken to learn more about the situation, and hope that you will join us for future calls or events or webinars. Thank you very much, and thanks to Amber and Boomba. Take good care. Bye-bye.